Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
At Lowe's, this Veterans Day and every day, verified military members, veterans, and their spouses get automatic silver status in MyLowe's Rewards with free standard shipping, plus 10% off eligible purchases with no annual limit. It's one way we honor and give back to those who have served and still do. Learn more now at Lowe's.com/military. 10% discount can't be combined with another offer. Exclusions, terms, and conditions apply. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at Lowe's.com/terms. Subject to change.
Whatever happens today, take it on with a fresh cup of True Brew Coffee. Now only $1 with True Rewards. True North Store's True Brew Coffee is a hot, flavorful gourmet blend created from coffee beans from around the world. As a free True Rewards member, pick the size that is perfect for you and pay only $1. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
WFAN, WFAN-FM, New York.
Oh, boy. Hey. Are they finally going to be playing these games? Oh, thank goodness. Oh, sorry. Championship Sunday. Good morning, everybody. This is Bob Salter. And of course, by the end of the day today, we will actually know who is going to be in Super Bowl 52. All the championship action on the fan a little bit later in the day today as well. I know there are a lot of folks who are excited. Of course, there'll be a lot of talk on that Football Sunday program a little bit later this morning, too. And a very special edition of that program. We'll tell you more about that as we proceed this morning. We have a good guest who is joining us on our program. He has spoken with us before. Rob Franek is joining us on our program today, and he is joining us from Princeton Review. We've always had good discussions in the past. First of all, good morning. Welcome back to our program, Rob.
Hey, Bob. Thanks for the invitation. Happy to be here.
It's good. You sound good and fired up, too, which is what I like. All right. In the course of this discussion, we'll get into talking about a number of different areas, including some that are going to intrigue some of the folks listening to us. We'll try to involve some of them in the discussion as well.
Great.
I always like to do a little bit of background here. Now, believe it or not, Rob, we've talked many times. There are actually people who may not know what Princeton Review is all about. How do you describe it?
Oh, sure. Yeah, we're an education services company. We've been around for 30 years, and we started in 1981 to help students master the SAT, and then we morphed into the ACT, SAT subject test, basically, you know, college entrance exams, but now we've morphed into every possible standardized test from AP exams to MCAT for graduate school students, you know, and GRE and GMAT. And then we have a full admission services company, financial aid services, so all the stuff to kind of get you into college or graduate school, but with great substance, right? Figuring out which school is going to be the best fit for you academically, financially, from a career services point of view, and you know, that's kind of, you know, what we're talking about today with this new book, too.
Rob is the lead author of the book, which is entitled Colleges That Pay You Back, the 100 Schools That Give You the Best Bang for Your Tuition Buck. Nice title, by the way.
Yeah, thanks.
What was it like putting this book together?
Well, you know, it's a ton of homework, and but the thing is that we're in an interesting position at the Prince Reviews, and we've been doing this stuff for a long time, sort of, you know, corralling all of this information that I think, you know, is really necessary for college-bound students and their parents to have, you know, sort of at the ready to figure out if the school is going to be a great fit for them academically, from a campus culture perspective, and then from a financial aid and career services perspective. Are you going to get great return on your academic investment if you're a student, and a great financial investment, a great return on your financial investment if you're a student or a family helping them pay the bill?
Mm. Well, you know, you mentioned about all this information. I mean, I think even with the technology that we have today, this almost seems like an overwhelming task. How long does it take in putting a book like this together?
It takes almost a year to put it together, and you're right. They're you know, it's awesome to live in modern times and that there's so much information, but it's also the blessing and the curse because there's so much information. How could, you know, a typical student, 15 through 17 years old, or their parents, you know, sort of filter for that stuff and focus on the information that's, you know, I think crucial. You know, but that said, I mean, this is the stuff that it's a pleasure for myself, our full team of the Princeton Review to do, because it actually makes our job that much easier in seeing schools that are, you know, academically superlative, but then also making, you know, doing the near impossible, which is actually making it affordable for the average student and family. So it's a really good story to tell there.
Okay. Now, you got a lot of people's attention with the portion of the title that talks about this idea of paying you back or giving you the best bang for the tuition buck.
Yeah.
Obviously, that's intentional.
Absolutely.
How good, you know, people listening to this show, in some cases, may be as blunt as saying, well, how good a deal can I get?
Yeah. Well, here's the thing, and I don't think anybody is wrong to say what's the greatest deal that I can get. But you know, the book is called Colleges That Pay You Back. I didn't call the book, you know, Best Cheap Colleges or you know, and that's intentional as well. Even though many of these schools can be great deals financially for the average student and family. So the thing is that I think people that are starting the college process, or maybe if they have kids that are right now, you know, applying to schools, they're going to be getting their letters of admission, you know, back between, let's say, you know, early January through middle of March. Many of those folks might want to say, you know, can you match, you know, school A with what school B is offering me? I think that that's probably not going to be a successful strategy. But what you can say, I think very, very honestly and with, you know, with great confidence is that, listen, my son or daughter, they love school A, but we just can't make the numbers work. That's more of a conversation that you can have with the, you know, Dean of Admission, VP of Enrollment, financial aid folks, because that says that you've done your research, right? And that you and your son or daughter have found fit in that school through all the levels that we chatted about, and that becomes much more of a conversation.
Okay, what about the whole question that obviously comes up from some folks too of public schools versus private colleges? What's the difference there?
Well, a couple of things from a financial aid perspective, and this is where I think people, you know, want to hear this information in my mind, to just know what the numbers are out there. Because when we, you know, when we read the newspaper, however you get your news, you know, there's lots of stories, and these are kind of troubling stories of students that are taking out ballooning debt, you know, $50,000, $80,000, $100,000 in debt, and then maybe didn't graduate from college. So just to sort of set the record straight, 1 year, and this is total cost of attendance. We call this the Big Four at the Princeton Review. That's tuition, room and board, fees, and books. So without any blinders on, it's $20,770 for 1 year of public college or university average across the states. On the other side of the fence, for 1 year total cost of attendance of a private college, again, tuition, room and board, fees, and books, it's $46,950. Now, those are expensive, but they're not what I think maybe some people might assume, which is $50,000, $60,000, $75,000 or more.
It still is a lot of
money. Oh, it's a lot of money.
It's a lot of money. You know, I had to help myself up off the floor because, you know, I went to school so long ago that, well, I don't even want to tell you how different the cost of tuition was then. And at that time, I thought that was a lot of money. But now,
sure.
I mean, how do people do it?
Yeah, it's crazy. When we start to think about, you know, just how, and this has leveled off over the last couple of years, but let's call it, you know, if we were having this conversation just 5 years back, tuition up until that time was continuing to grow 2 to 3 times past the rate of inflation every year for 20 years consecutively. So it's not surprising. I went to school 25 years ago, and school was expensive, but if we just go back 30 years or 35 years, the amount compounded over that time of how schools have increased, it really is heart-stopping. And it's heart-stoppingly expensive when we start to hear the cost. But the truth is that there are lofty sticker costs, but then there are schools that are really, really aggressive about giving out a great deal of aid to those students that, one, need it from a financial need perspective, and then, two, that they want from an academic perspective. So the driver becomes the student and the family.
When you say these schools are aggressive about giving out aid, the first question that popped into my head as you said that is, how aggressive and in what ways?
Well, I'm thinking aggressive in just by way of the scholarship dollars that students are receiving to go to those schools. So it's aggressive in the best way. Aggressive because those schools are actively, if you're admitted to that school, let's say, and I'll give you an example. We have 7 different ranking lists in the book, one of which is best financial aid. And there's a school on it. This is a great school. I've been writing about it for a long time at the Princeton Review called Bowdoin College, and it's in Brunswick, Maine. It's only 1,800 students, but the sticker cost is $66,000 every year. But, you know, if it was my parents looking at that, or maybe folks that are listening today, but the biggest mistake we've seen students and parents make is saying, oh, we could never afford a Bowdoin or another school with that $66,000 sticker cost. But here's the thing. They're giving out average aid packages of $42,000. Now, that's not $1 in loan, Bob. So bringing it down to about $24,000. What a student and family could typically expect to pay for 1 year of public college or university in their home state. So that's the stuff that I love writing about, because I think now, you know, students and parents that are going through the process can say, hey, that sticker cost school might not actually charge me that full sticker cost. And that is kind of the glory in the process in my mind.
And then we get into the whole issue of exactly who qualifies for this.
So absolutely. Now that, I mean, is kind of the tricky thing. Now there are 200 schools in the book, a third of which are public, two-thirds of which are private. Now we have some of the most competitive schools in the country, like Stanford University, right? It's number one on our College of the Payback list. But out of the 35,000 people that applied to Stanford last year, only 4.2% were accepted. Now, if you're in that cohort that was accepted, then financial aid is not going to be an issue because they will meet a student family's need 100%. But then there are other schools in the book that are admitting 70-75% of their incoming class. So the truth is that we tried to pick a great cross-section of schools by way of competitiveness, but always with that underlying idea of saying they are making it affordable for the average student and family.
Mm. It's very interesting publication and interesting discussion that we've really just begun in talking with Rob Franek, who is from Princeton Review. He is the lead author on this book. We're going to be talking a lot more about this with him. Our program is on until 7:30 this Sunday morning. And a lot of things to get to in this discussion. A little later in this hour or two, we'll try to start to work in some thoughts from some of the folks listening to us. If you have some questions or comments along the lines of some of the things that we've brought up. Colleges that pay you back, the 200 schools that give you the best bang for your tuition buck. Rob Franek has joined us on our program, as I mentioned. He's with us until the NFL preview program happens at 7:30 this Sunday morning. It's Sunday morning on The Fan. Matter of fact, Championship Sunday, and you're hearing an awful lot about what's upcoming on WFAN today. I wouldn't go anywhere if I were you. And there's a little surprise a little later this hour, too. Hey, don't head anywhere. We're in a very good discussion with Rob Franek on our program. He is the lead author on an interesting publication. It comes our way from Princeton Review, and we're talking with him about that. We'll work in some thoughts from some of the folks listening to us as we continue in our discussion a little bit later in the hour. You mentioned earlier in the first portion of our discussion today about the fact that there are 7 categories in this book. What are the categories and why those categories?
Well, we have seven different ranking lists. The first one is a top 1 to 50, and that is overall colleges that pay you back, and that is really focused on what is going to be the return on a student's academic investment and that student and family's financial investment. So that's kind of the biggest of the list. But then the other six lists I think are incredibly interesting and really kind of the most popular ones. I had mentioned one before, Bob, which is called Best Financial Aid.
Right.
As we said, Bowdoin College up in Maine is the number one school for that. But then the next one is Best Career Placement. So again, thinking about what students are doing in the classroom in college, is it setting them up for internships and co-ops and experiential learning? And then are they using the career development resources at that school to actually get a job upon graduation or to move on to a graduate school should they want to. Next is Best Alumni Network. And we can yap about these things all morning because they're so interesting. The idea of the alumni network, once you graduate from a school, how does that school sort of endear you to that community throughout the rest of your life? And it's not just, writing a check to the development office, but it's saying, if I've continued to prosper and profit in my own professional life, can I give back to my school through internships and co-ops and hire folks out of there? And then what if I lose my job mid-career? Can I go back to the school? And there's really good news there for students and families as well. Next is best internships. Again, looking very specifically about what internships students are getting and then schools making an impact, and that's kind of a pork-bellied category. But what are students doing in the classroom that really does profit their lives later on? And we can talk about that. So yeah, there's really, I think, great stuff. Now this last ranking list is a fairly new one for us, and it's for top colleges where students don't have demonstrated means. So they're not likely going to receive financial aid through the government, through the FAFSA form, which we could talk to as well. But they're still actively giving out merit-based money for those students based on SAT and ACT scores and GPA.
Mm. Let's back up for a second because you intrigued me with this idea of best career placement.
Oh, yeah.
And I would imagine that gets a lot of students and their parents' attention because, a lot of people want to know, what's down the road? Can I get a job in this field? And basically is one of the big questions that I'm assuming always comes up.
Absolutely. And the thing is, Bob, and I'm so glad that you brought it up because students and parents might be feeling that way right now. If let's say your son or daughter is in high school, and you should be feeling that way, and you shouldn't feel like it's taboo to bring those things up. Is my son or daughter going to get a job upon graduation? Yes, we should feel empowered to bring up that question. But honestly, 5 years ago, certainly 10 years ago, it would have been taboo to bring up that question. But now it's not, for all the reasons that we've been discussing, right? College isn't getting any less expensive. And as we start to think about the value of a college education, we have to understand that there's going to be value for that student, upon graduation. So career placement is a huge interest.
And, you talk about this idea of value for the student upon graduation leads perfectly into talking about the next category that you mentioned. And I made note of this as you said it. The idea of the alumni network,
mm-hmm.
Okay, and those two words can go together in a way that it's almost like a perfect fit, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. When you start to think about it, I'm on the road most of the academic year, talking to students and parents, and really about finding a school that's going to be the best fit for you. And when I say things like, listen, people are going to ask you where you went to college until you take your last breath. And that's not exaggerated at all. But the thing is, if you've chosen correctly, if you've chosen a school that's going to be a great fit for you academically, campus culture, financial aid, career services, then you're going to want to, and your experience at that school is good, then you're going to want to talk about that school forever. And alumni networks are going to want to mine your experience and your contagious energy about your experience at that school, and that's going to happen throughout your lifetime. I went to a little school in New Jersey, and I think about this place all the time. It's a little school called Drew University. I loved it, and I'm on the board out there. I talk about the school all the time, and it's 25 years since I've graduated, and that's just my singular experience. But there are so many millions and millions of folks that had that same experience and can actively give out to current undergraduates at that school.
Internships. Now, this is an interesting area because You know, there are a lot of people who have had internships, done internships, whether they were paid or not paid, that in some cases led to or directly led to paid positions.
Yeah. Okay?
But an internship doesn't necessarily lead directly to a job, obviously, but it can be, I would think, and correct me if I'm wrong on this, Rob, a great way for a student to kind of find out the culture and the job field they're interested in?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, and you hit it right on the head. The value of an internship is really there's lots of different value. One, you know, giving you an experience, giving you a very clear look as to what a particular industry or profession could yield for you. And then you might decide, I love this field. Or you might decide, I hate this field. And just think about the time savings. If you could do that when you're an undergrad, that's awesome. Whether you loved it or you hate it, you're learning something about that profession that you're going to, you know, be able to take with you. And that's going to help you decide what your next steps are going to be. On the paid part of the internship, and we should say that, you know, schools, you know, if parents are listening now or students are listening now and they start to, you know, make a campus visit to a particular college or they start getting information in that, you know, in the mail or through email or whatever, people will, on the school side, on the college side of the fence, will call internships, they could call them co-ops, you know, that idea of cooperative learning, experiential learning, learn by doing, whatever the nomenclature is that's preferred at the school, doesn't matter, because it all means the same thing. It means, what are you doing outside the classroom to complement likely what you've studied in the classroom, but to give you the experiences that you're citing. And, you know, in this number one school on the list, I'm a huge fan of this school, and it's Northeastern University in Boston is the number one school for best internships. But, you know, they have a little over 2,000 internships, and they call them co-ops at Northeastern, that students can take, and they spend one full year in that cooperative experience. We call Northeastern graduates at Princeton Review, you know, without exaggeration, some of the most employable upon graduation because of those internships, because of those co-ops that those students are taking.
You know, that's been a situation, correct me if I'm wrong on this, hasn't that been something that has been a strong suit of Northeastern for years, that they've offered that kind of approach where students have, you know, a lot of students wind up with internships?
Absolutely, and you're very right. Now, Northeastern is a good example, but it's a particular example because they are the leaders in this field. I mean, they've been doing this stuff 50-plus years, and they require a student to take that co-op, that internship, and it's one full year of their studies, right? So that means that your undergraduate experience is not going to be 4 years, it's going to be 5 years, so people have to factor that in, but many of those internships and co-ops are paid, right? So, and then students are earning jobs upon graduation, likely because of those internships, as you cite, but it's important to understand the specifics. So it's a five-year degree, not a four-year degree, but one full year spent outside the classroom, likely in a paid position.
All right, let me follow on another one of the categories you mentioned a few moments ago, and that was schools that make an impact. What do you mean by that?
Well, just thinking about what students are doing academically. I'll give you an example. We've been writing a lot about the idea of entrepreneurship on the undergraduate side, on the college side of the fence. But, you know, one of the things that we've been chatting about at Princeton Review is the idea of entrepreneurship, you know, students that really love business and want to go in for themselves, you know, to start their own businesses, but then pairing that with particular undergraduate majors, music, biology, but then other things that can cure social problems in using that, you know, sort of entrepreneurial moxie and then focused on things that are actually doing really, really good stuff. So it's an academic perspective. What are students doing by way of services and resources on campus? And then are they giving back to that school after they graduate as well?
It's got to be an awful lot of fun doing this because there's so many different areas that are covered. The book, again, is entitled Colleges That Pay You Back, The 200 Schools That Give You the Best Bang for Your Tuition Buck. We're talking with Rob Franek, who is lead author on this book. He is with Princeton Review. He's joined us by phone on our program. If you want to join the discussion, by the way, with a question or comment in the area of some of the things we're talking about, you can call us at 877-337-6666. That's the phone number here at WFAN, 877-337-6666. When we talk about the whole process with school. We've touched upon this before. What is it that admissions officers are looking for?
It's really, and this question comes up all the time, so I'm glad that you brought it up. But it's so focused and simple when we start to think about how college-bound students from a college application are attractive to an admission office, an admission, committee. The number one most important thing that an admission counselor on the college side of the fence will look for when they start to evaluate a student's application is going to be that student's high school GPA. But we can sharpen that by saying their high school GPA and their high school transcript. If folks are listening to this conversation, they have to know that a student's high school transcript is the weightiest, the most revealing document in a college admission application because it answers this question. Did that student challenge themselves when they were in high school? Did they challenge themselves, with regular level courses, advanced level courses, AP level courses, IB level courses? What were the opportunities that you had at, Old Bethpage High School, and then did you take advantage of those challenges? And then obviously, what's the GPA? But it is absolutely the primary driver. Mm. Close second is going to be SAT and ACT scores, as being standardized tests. But cross those two streams, of high school GPA and transcript and SAT and ACT scores, that will unlock, admission to the majority of schools and at so many of those schools unlock scholarship dollars based on your academic performance, to attend those schools. So I can't stress enough how powerful those two levers are.
Mm. And to go over something you mentioned earlier, because there are people who are just joining us in our discussion, Rob, as amazing as a thought as that may be. I always think people are going to be riveted from the exact moment that we start speaking. The average grant to a student these days is what?
Well, it's nearly, call it $25,000 to $26,000. So, it could be great and it could be powerful. But the way that students get those dollars is just what we're discussing. Pardon me. It is high school GPA and SAT and ACT scores for the majority of schools. Now, I should say, and maybe this will come up in the questions with callers as well, is that there's something called test optional schools, which simply means that a student needn't submit their SAT scores or their ACT scores for academic admission to those schools. But I think as you and I have talked in the past, Bob, we should also know that schools that are test optional might still require your SAT or ACT scores for scholarship dollars. So to be considered for scholarship dollars, let's just be smart. And my job at Princeton Review is to say, listen, I have no gain in this by leading a student and a parent wrong. So if a school is test optional, yes, you needn't submit those SAT and ACT scores for academic admission, but some of those schools might require it for scholarship dollars. So let's be clear about the process and some of the pitfalls that some folks fall into.
Rob Franek is talking with us on our program on The Fan this Sunday morning. The NFL preview happens at 7:30. We're talking with him about some of the information that's contained in Colleges That Pay You Back, the 200 schools that give you the best bang for your tuition buck. Rob is with Princeton Review, and he's joined us by phone on our program. You want to join us in our discussion, and we're starting to get folks who are jumping on the lines here, 877-337-6666. I want to have the opportunity for folks listening to us to ask some questions of Rob in the course of this discussion. Of course, there's things that I want to bring up as well, but our listeners often take us in interesting areas of discussion, too. I'll tell you what, we will do that as we continue on our program this Sunday morning. I love the fact that he gets as excited as he does, and he's so handsome, too. Good morning, everybody. This is Bob Salter on our program on Sunday mornings. We get into interesting areas of discussion. We're in one with Rob Franek. Rob is from Princeton Review, and he is talking with us about some of the information that's contained in Colleges That Pay You Back, the 200 schools that give you the best bang for your tuition buck. And we've shared an awful lot thus far in our discussion. Now let's work in some of the folks listening to us. WFAN's toll-free line, 877-337-6666. It's brought to you by Mohegan Sun. Unlimited possibilities await you at Mohegan Sun. Plan your stay at MohiganSun.com. All right, to the phones we go. First to Paul in Plainview, who's been holding for a while. Paul, good morning. Welcome to The Fan.
Hi, good morning, gentlemen. Pleasure to talk to you. For those of us with college kids or kids heading towards college, this is a very fascinating topic. But I need to ask you a question in regard to St. John's University, if that's in the book. And secondly, is going to a community college for 2 years and then going to a bigger school, paying the extra money, obviously a better choice? Or is it better just to go to the four-year school and just for the reputation, if you will, for going to that school for 4 years?
Yeah. Hey, Paul, that's a great, this is a great question, and I should say we're huge St. John's fans at the Princeton Review. We do write about St. John's in lots of different publications. Now, it didn't make the list of the 200 schools. Now, there are nearly 20 New York schools, you know, some city, Long Island, and sort of throughout the whole state. So St. John's not on that list. But to answer your question, this is one that comes up all the time. Should, you know, I advise my son or daughter, you know, to go to a two-year school, or should we follow the four-year school route? Now, the two-year school route, you know, a student will likely graduate with a associate's degree. It will likely be a community college, you know, somewhere that that student can commute from home. There's likely going to be a great savings from that school. And the truth is you can transfer to any four-year college, particularly if that student has done really well in those first 2 years. Here's the only wrinkle with going from going from a two-year school to a four-year school. Not every student wants to start at a two-year school. So you have to, you know, sort of know your son or daughter. They have to know themselves and say, can I do well in this regard? Now, there's going to be a great cost savings, you're right, typically speaking, but one thing to keep in mind, and this never really comes up in discussion, is that since you're going to be at that four-year school, when you matriculate in, after you apply after 2 years, you're likely going to earn less scholarship dollars because you're only going to be there for 2 years. So that's just something that I would keep in the back of my mind, as well as when you're visiting that community college and that four-year college, just to find out what those average scholarship dollars are for transfer students.
Okay, and the other thing you had said in regard to relationships that you build at the school, is that also a factor in this as well?
You know, it is. The truth is that if you sort of ultimately end up at a four-year college, then you're going to build those relationships there. Not just because a student transfers in after a year or 2 years of study at another school doesn't mean they can't, you know, have the same you know, advantages and resources. You're just going to have less time to do it. So that's where I think you just have to, again, know yourself, know your son or daughter. And honestly, schools are really, really good about wrapping students in as soon as they get onto campus, whether they're a transfer student or a first-year student, to make sure that they understand the services that are available to them. And I'll just sharpen this one. Well, I'll say one more quick thing. What I kind of love is Bob and I were talking about this idea of internships and co-ops. When I was in college, you know, that those things happen in maybe your junior year in college. But the truth is that now students are getting that kind of outside the classroom experience from their first day, first semester on campus. Now, that's just one other thing to keep in mind, that you're likely going to have multiple experiences outside the classroom that are going to give them, you know, that kind of internship co-op experience and could likely help them later on from a career perspective.
Got it. Thank you, gentlemen. I appreciate it.
Paul, thank you.
Thanks, Paul.
Good luck, too. Stay on the phones, 877-337-6666. That's our number here at The Fan. We go next to John in Piscataway, New Jersey. John, good morning. Welcome to The Fan.
Good morning, and thank you for taking my call. I appreciate it. My situation is that I have a grandson who's a junior at UMass, and one of the prerequisites for attending grad school is that he do an internship. He is studying accounting, and he lives on Long Island. And he'd like to stay on Long Island. And I have worked hard, as he has worked hard, in trying to attract any accounting firm or any firm for that matter in getting him this internship. And we seem to have run into a brick wall where we have not had any success in any way, shape, or form of getting him involved in an internship. He does not want, if it's at all possible, to stay up in Boston because then he would have to pay for his housing and food and everything else, and quite frankly, his parents can't afford it.
Mm-hmm.
So my question to you is there a trick? Is there a another way? Are we going about trying to get his internship the wrong way? I don't know. I'm kind of at a loss as to how to try to help him, and I want to help him in every way, shape, or form, but I don't know what to do.
Hmm. Yeah, this is a good question, and it's John, right?
Right.
Yeah, John. John, great question. I don't, to answer your question, one, I don't think you're doing anything wrong at all. It sounds like you and your grandson and likely his parents are taking on a huge part of the responsibility and a part of the process. Here's the only thing. I'll just ask a couple of quick questions. Are you using, and I'm a huge UMass fan, does he go to UMass Amherst or UMass Boston?
Amherst.
Amherst, yeah, a huge, huge fan. I mean, it's the flagship of the UMass system, and where I write about the school often. Are you using, and is he using the career development office specifically at UMass and or his academic department, whether it's the accounting department or business department on campus, to help use their resources and their connections to mine internships for him?
Their connections, and this is just my guess. And my poor memory as to what was said to me, that they'd be willing to help him, but only up there.
I see.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I would actually be more insistent. I would get back into that office. And so, I mean, UMass is a huge system. New York City's only a couple hours away. I mean, I suspect that if you push them a little bit and ask them again and saying, I'm going to need some more help here. I totally understand they're probably going to have better relations close by or in Boston. And then there's some added expense with that. But I would be more insistent. I don't think that you're doing anything else wrong. Here's the other thing that might be really helpful to reach out to the alumni network. Now, there's certainly alumni relations office at UMass and many of the other schools that are, across the country, as Bob and I were talking about. I wonder if you can reach out through the alumni relations to see if anybody in that alumni network might be an accountant or working in an accounting firm. That might be another interesting way to focus on it.
That's a good idea. I would never have even given that a thought at all.
Oh, well, good. Yeah. And UMass is a huge school, and that means lots and lots of people graduate each year, and, they go on to do well. They've been around forever. Yeah, so I would focus on that one.
All right. I will try to do that, and I thank you for that suggestion. That's a good one.
Thank you. Travel safe.
I appreciate it. Thank
you for your patience on the phone as well. 877-337-6666 is our phone number here at The Fan. If you're on hold, stay there. We try to get to you as expeditiously as possible on this program. Next up is Sonny in Malvern, New York. Sonny, good morning. Welcome to The Fan.
Hey, good morning, guys. Thanks for taking the call. I really appreciate it. This is more of a SAT question, if you don't mind, Rob.
Sure.
My son's in 10th grade. He just took the PSATs. And now he's getting a lot of letters from different schools.
Yeah.
I would imagine this is the first time I'm experiencing this. So I would imagine those schools, he's hitting a certain profile through his scores and the school which he goes to now, which is a Catholic school, because he's receiving letters from Catholic schools and also from schools that hit his PSAT score. Is that correct, Rob?
That is absolutely correct, and here's the thing, Sonny. This is not going to stop. Particularly if your son is talented, he's done well on the PSAT. He's likely going to do well on the SAT or the ACT or both if he's going to take both exams in the next year. And you're right. Schools, colleges and universities will buy those student names from College Board or from the ACT themselves, and then start targeting those students. And the truth is that's probably not a bad process, but here's the thing to just keep a lookout out for. One, I always think more information is better than not, so this is a good thing. But some schools will try to attract a student, particularly if they're gifted test takers and they've done really well, and then your high school profile is going to match them. It's kind of hard to filter and focus for those things. So as Bob and I were talking about the idea of finding fit, thinking about fit from an academic perspective, campus culture, financially, make sure that all of those things are on your hit list and that you can tick them off when you're reading this material or when you're talking to these people on the phone or certainly when you go and visit campus.
Right. Now, how much is there flexibility? Say a school says you look it up and their SAT requires, for example, 1,200 to 1,400.
Yep.
Say your son or daughter has 1,100. Is there flexibility? I mean, I'm sure they look at GPA too. Obviously, my son's very well balanced. He plays three sports. You know, he does volunteer work. He's very well balanced, which I think is very important, obviously, what these schools are looking for.
Absolutely. If that, you know, sort of student that has, you know, your son is already ticking off all the boxes, right? Talented academically, you know, is able to balance, you know, athletics and along with schoolwork. I mean, this is great. And you're right. Schools, colleges, and universities are going to focus on that student, that kind of renaissance student that can, you know, really do it all. So absolutely. But high school GPA is always going to be first on the list. Second, you know, as by way of pecking order and just what it's, what is most attractive to them. SAT and ACT scores are a close, you know, second, and then all of the other things, what students are doing outside the classroom.
And one last question, Robert, if you don't mind. And how important is it, the high school that he goes to, and how challenged that is? He goes to a very good Catholic school called Kellenberg on Long Island here. And how important is that? They recognize that, don't they, the colleges?
Absolutely. And Kellenberg Memorial, I've been there many times. It is a great school. And here's the thing, particularly if, you know, I mean, we all live in the, you know, many of us live in the tri-state area, so we have lots of, you know, great schools. And we should know that perception and the brand and the reputation of a school really does speak volumes to those admission counselors and those admission committees, you know, reviewing our kids. And that's, you know, I'm sure your college office at Kellenberg is going to say the same thing, but you can hear it from me as a third party. It absolutely matters in the process.
All right, thank you. That's important because I'm working hard to make sure he gets being a the greatest possible position to be successful, and that's why I put him there. So thank you, Rob. I appreciate it.
Of course. Good to talk to you.
Thank you, Sonny. All right, next up on The Fan is Kevin from West Islip. Kevin, good morning. Welcome to The Fan.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I have a three-part question, and I'm going to try to be really brief for you. The first part, is, just to give a quick background, is I never really went to college. I took college courses in high school, and I went to about a year of a community college when I was younger. Long story short, so when I had children, I was sort of a novice at the whole college education, experience and how to work it. My older son was fantastic. He went to a FIT in the city, actually. And I got to say, I don't know where they are on your list, but he's done amazing through networking after the fact.
Oh, I love this.
And is doing well for himself. My younger son, that's the crux of it right now, is going to Johns Hopkins.
Yep.
So obviously you're aware that's a major burden.
Yeah, of course.
Okay, now, at first, they were very diligent, like you said, about, you know that $66,000 school giving you $30,000,
$40,000
in aid.
Right.
Got into year two, I'm sorry, year three. He's now a senior, actually. Got into year three, and because he made a little bit of extra money, and because I made more money,
yeah,
and because he lived off campus, which they actually own the site that he lives on, which is only a block away, they reduced it by literally almost $18,000.
Oh, my gosh.
But I was able to, you know, to arbitrate it and appeal it and get another, like, $9,000 to $10,000 back. So it wasn't horrible. So my question is there any other method you can think of that I could somehow... You know, like a friend of mine told me, I should literally have my son threaten to leave. But at this point, it's too late. He's going to graduate this year.
Mm-hmm.
But he plans on going back there for a fifth year. Is there any other method you can think of that I should utilize to try to, you know, get them to give me the maximum number of dollars possible?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good question, Kevin. And here's the thing: the fifth year, is it going to be a fifth undergraduate year? Is he going to do a graduate program that fifth year? What's the
he's completing his second major.
Second major, okay, gotcha. So his second undergraduate major.
Right.
Okay. I mean, I think you're doing the right things. It seems like you've been in contact with Hopkins. I mean, and this is a fabulous, you know, school. And I was just looking it up, and it is in the book that we've been, you know, talking about this morning, Colleges That Pay You Back. But, you know this better than me. $51,000 just for raw tuition, adding in another at least $15,000 for room and board, and then additional fees. So I suspect that's probably, you know, what they're subtracting from your aid package. But I I do think it's the conversation that you need to have. And I don't think it is the threatening to leave, but I do think that you sitting down with the, it's likely going to be the financial aid office, but I would right. use the advocacy from, you know, an academic department that your son is in, particularly if he's staying for a fifth year. Now you have, I think, I hate to call it leverage, but it's something like leverage because you've invested, right. he's invested himself academically and absolutely they should give you some sit down time.
All right, Kevin, we got a roll here. Okay. I'm sorry. Good luck to you. Rob Franek, we'll talk more with you as we continue. And we move into our 7 o'clock hour here on The Fan.
WFAN, WFAN-FM, New York.
Along after our 8 o'clock update, Rick Wolf is by doing the sports update program. At 7:30 this morning, the NFL preview program happens. Boomer Esiason and the gang taking a look at Championship Sunday. And speaking of Championship Sunday, oh, that spectacular NFL program is along after our 9 o'clock update this morning with a special surprise and twist to it, too, that you've been hearing about. I don't think you're going to want to miss that. We're in discussion, that's a good one, with Rob Franek on our program. Rob, the lead author of Colleges That Pay You Back, the 200 schools that give you the best bang for your tuition buck. What's the biggest thing that surprised you in putting this book together?
Well, Bob, I think that there's so much financial aid available. When I think about it, it's $181 billion this year, right? So our focus at the Princeton Review and putting Colleges That Pay You Back together is, you know, focused on schools that are, in my mind, doing the near impossible, which is to not make college unaffordable for the average student and parent. But the truth is, there's a lot of money to be had out there. And I think that that might just give a little bit of, you know, comfort and solace to people that are starting the college process, you know, in the next year or years.
Mm. And are people surprised when they hear those kinds of numbers?
Every time. Every time that I say $180 billion, it's surprising. But I can sharpen it and say, listen, you know, there's only I really liked, you know, Kevin, the last caller that we were chatting with. You know, he said that he didn't go to college. He completed a little bit of college and then didn't finish. But the truth is that whether you as a parent went to college or you didn't go to college, you're either learning or relearning about the college process with your kids. Because the truth is, you know, we've all been out of school for 20, 25 years, whatever it might be. And schools have changed. I mean, they've changed tectonically every year since you graduated or, you know, since you thought about college the last time. So there's that. The other thing is only a third of students in college today actually pay the sticker cost. So the other two-thirds are receiving some sort of financial aid. And just another global number, 70% of all students are receiving financial aid to help pay for college. So again, trying to give some solace and comfort, I do think that you have to be smart and navigate the process intelligently with confidence, and that's, you know, kind of where my job comes in.
Mm. Well, we are sharing with folks listening to us the opportunity to ask questions along the lines of things that we're talking about in this discussion with Rob Franek. And let's go back to the phones. WFAN's toll-free line, 877-337-6666. It's brought to you by Mohegan Sun. Unlimited possibilities await you at Mohegan Sun. Plan your stay at MoheganSun.com. Let's go to Lonnie in Westchester. Lonnie, good morning. Welcome to The Fan.
Good morning, gentlemen. How are you?
Good.
Thank you.
Good. I had two questions. First, my daughter is a freshman at URI and just finished her first semester. She transferred in with 31 credits out of her high school career. So the first question is, what are the benefits of graduating a full year early other than obviously saving one full year of tuition?
Right.
Do jobs look at that highly? And then the second one was on internships. What are the odds or chances of getting paid internships as she's looking at, obviously, in the New York City area, and the commute obviously is going to cost a little bit of money, $350 to $400 to commute a month. And, you know, are there chances good chances of getting paid internships there?
Yeah, I love these questions, Lonnie, and this is great. Well, first of all, you know, kudos to your daughter, 31 credits from high school. That's awesome. And I can imagine, you know, University of Rhode Island is a fabulous school, and, you know, we've been profiling it a long time at the Princeton Review, so this is just, you know, great and good stuff. To answer your question, I mean, the idea of graduating early, does it have value? Certainly, as you say, the, you know, value from the wallet perspective, absolutely. But from an employer perspective, or if your daughter wants to move on to a graduate school or professional school, I mean, graduating early, you've just continued to do everything that colleges want you to do, right? Which is continue to challenge yourself, do well, not to overburden yourself with academic challenges, but to do well in the challenges that you take on, and clearly she can do the work. So I think that continues to tell a good story from an education perspective and from an employment perspective. And then internships, the truth is that there are many paid internships, but paid internships can happen in a spectrum of things. Now, as we were talking about with Northeastern a little while ago, Bob and I, many of those internships are paid internships, but other ones might not be. But they might give you a stipend. They might give you a travel stipend. They might give you, you know, some travel and lunch and things like that. So it might not be a fully paid internship like at Northeastern, but to save on some expense into New York City from your home outside of town, absolutely. Those things happen, and they happen often.
Great. That's awesome. I really appreciate your help with that.
What's her major? No, what's her major, by the way, Lonnie?
She has a dual major. She's dual majoring in communications and public relations. And she's contemplating a minor in business. Just finished with a 3.75 on her first semester, so
awesome.
Very proud of her.
Good
very
for her.
Proud.
Well done. Well done.
Thank you. Certainly
Thank you.
Good luck.
Thank you, sir.
Thank
Bye-bye.
You. 877-337-6666 is our phone number here at The Fan this Sunday morning. You want to join Rob Frenick in our discussion and talk with him, ask a question, make a comment? You can. Let's go next to John in New Jersey. John, good morning. Welcome to The Fan.
Good morning. I'll make this quickly. First of all, I'm 75 years old. I'm a grandfather. I put my four kids through college, two through George Washington. Now, on George Washington, you haven't heard this yet, but I got a big break because I got half tuition for the second one. They were 2 years apart at George Washington. The Northeastern, my daughter went to Michigan.
Yeah.
My youngest went to Northeastern. Now, quick story on Northeastern. He was not the greatest in the world student, and he got his internship and so on, and he lived off campus with his friends, and the college experience, they partied hardy all the time, and we were up there, and all the guys in the house were going out to the Cape after Labor Day for a week. They were going to have a good party. I said, Dave, are you going? He says, no, I can't go. I got my job.
I love it.
Wow, thank you, Northeastern. Thank you. Yeah. But why I'm here, why I'm calling you is, what do you think of, because my grandkids are, you know, computer maniacs, they're great, of the digital universities now, especially Arizona State. They are advertising unbelievably, and getting, according to them, I haven't checked it out with U.S. News yet, but great results. I don't know if you are interested in that at all. What do you think of it, though, as the way of the future?
Oh, yeah. John, excellent question, and I'm glad that you brought it up. That idea of, you know, if students are learning online, how is this going to change the way that students learn? It, you know, the brick-and-mortar schools that you know, we went to, or that our kids went to, or whatever, that it's just not going to be the same model with the same offerings from 10, 20, 25 years ago, right? And that's kind of the glory of it, right? Schools, colleges, and universities continue to change, and they continue to meet students where they are comfortable studying, and then to think, you know, differently about how we educate students. So I applaud ASU, Arizona State University. You know, Michael Crow is their president, has been a leader in that idea of digital learning, online learning, and hybrid learning, right? So maybe it's not going to totally replace the college experience. There's a school out in California, which I'm a big fan of, called Minerva. It was started off called the Minerva Project, where all classes are taught online. You still live in a brick and mortar, you know, kind of residence hall, but all of your classes are taught online. That's kind of like the outlier still in the process. But ASU and other schools like that that have hybrid learning, so you take some classes online, some classes in the brick and mortar classroom, and it's the mixing and crossing of the streams there that I think is pretty glorious. And it's likely going to set those students up, those graduates up, to do really, really well upon graduation.
Right. That's good. I want to give kudos to Northeastern, not just because they, set a serious tone for my son, but also the admissions policy was much easier than the others.
I totally hear you. You know, and I applaud, you know, and as Bob and I were talking about, we write about a lot of schools at Princeton Review. I think that, you know, there are certainly the most competitive schools in the land, but not every student is going to get into them if they wouldn't want to. They're not going to be great fits there.
Exactly.
Yeah, and you have to think broadly. You have to widen the lens. And that is, in my mind, the fun and again, the glory of the college research part of the process.
Now, there's also, in the University of Michigan, this thing called the residential college, which is if you're specializing in language, and some of them have, I know Rice University has the same thing, where you, if you want to learn a language, you get immersed in that language from freshman year on, and you live with all the other people that want to learn Spanish, French, Chinese, and so forth in a wing of the door, in this college, and you speak it at lunch, breakfast, and so forth. So I don't know if you're aware of that, especially in Michigan.
I love it. I mean, and I am familiar with programs like that, and I think, again, you know, those students are going to have a great experience as an undergrad, but then think about their value upon graduation. I mean, that they're just going to do so well.
Right, they take the other classes, but my daughter came out by trilingual, not English, French, Spanish, and then, of course, the native
tongue. Oh, my word.
Yeah, so kudos to
fabulous.
University of Michigan. Yeah,
good stuff.
But again, I encourage all grandparents. Like I said, I'm 75 years old, I'm a grandparent. I have eight grandkids, and you know, get involved in the process. Go, you know, and it'll be a rewarding experience for you as well as, you know, your grandkids.
Excellent, John. Thank you very much. Certainly, good
my
luck
pleasure. Thank you.
All right. Interesting discussion, interesting perspectives from folks listening to us as always. Rob Franek from Princeton Review is talking with us and talking with us about some of the information contained in Colleges That Pay You Back. And we'll talk more with him as we continue on our program. Rick Wolf is along with the Sports Edge after our 8 o'clock update. NFL preview happens at 7:30 this morning in that fabulous Football Sunday program on the road. At 9 this morning. I love the fact there's always things happening with WFAN these days, and those guys are going to have a fantastic broadcast this morning after 9. Rick Wolf is along with the Sports Edge after our 8 o'clock update. NFL preview happens at 7:30 this morning. Congratulations, by the way, to Fred Ames, who claimed the tickets that we were giving away before our update and messages here on The Fan. We are in discussion with Rob Franek from Princeton Review and talking with him about some of the information that's contained in this very interesting book that we've been sharing information about in this discussion this morning. Also trying to work in some thoughts from some of the folks listening to us. 877-337-6666 is our number. Let's go back to the phone and back to Todd in Carl Place, who's been holding for a while. Todd, good morning. Welcome to The Fan.
Hey, how's everything going today?
Excellent. And yourself?
Yeah, pretty good. Pretty good. Just driving home from work. Hey, listen, very interesting topic. My question is, I actually have three kids that are all middle school age. I was just wondering if you have any suggestions. Maybe I should be doing something now to get them ready for college now or no. What do you think?
The earlier, I think, that parents and their kids start thinking and talking about college, the better. And I don't mean that to say that we have to, you know, sort of, you know, feel like students are getting off track if you're not thinking about testing or the right college or, you know, getting into the best college that, you know, by way of just competitiveness. The truth is that the conversation, in my experience at Princeton Review, and I've been there now 18 years at the Princeton Review, it kind of diffuses the craziness around the process and makes students and parents and families in general feel empowered about the process. And that to me is the value, because you can start talking about, you know, what's the place that, you know, you would love to study, or what do you like to do in middle school right now, and how might that translate into college? And then you can talk about financial aid and money and careers later on. And it just brings in the conversation earlier on, and it is that much better.
Well, you know what? Like, I'm more wondering, like, if there's any maybe extracurricular activities that should be kind of pointing them toward. Like, one of my daughters does drama. My son plays hockey. Like, is that good? Is that a waste of time? You know, that kind of thing.
Oh, yeah. No, they're never a waste of time. And the truth is, and we were talking about this, I think, close to the beginning of the, you know, of the show, you know, what is the most attractive, what are the things that admission counselors on the college side of the fence are going to look for? We said GPA is number one, and the competitiveness of their transcript, you know, has a student continuously challenge themselves to his SAT and ACT scores. But then it's all the other things. You know, are students athletes? Are they athletic scholars? You know, do they play a musical instrument? Are they in theater? And they in band? You know, maybe they do none of those things. Maybe they decide that they want to work throughout high school, or they want to volunteer at, you know, a church or a mosque or a synagogue, whatever it might be, Habitat for Humanity, things that can happen outside of the classroom and outside of the school in general. All of those things, you know, go onto that list of extracurricular activities and allows that college then to say, hey, you're a great fit for us academically, but now let's look at the other things. You can be a great fit for us in so many different levels.
Very interesting. All right, cool. Thanks for the advice.
Of course.
Thank you for your patience on the phone, and travel safely too, Todd, this morning. Let's see if we can do one more call here before we wrap up. Let's go to Brendan in Brooklyn. Brendan, good morning. Welcome to The Fan.
Good morning. I wanted to ask if the Princeton Review had two colleges on their list, specifically Cornell and the University of Massachusetts.
I'm looking them up right. I mean, both are excellent schools. Now, Cornell is not on the list this year. Now, it is on many, many different lists for Princeton Review. But UMass Amherst is on the list and has long been in, you know, colleges that pay you back. And here's both fabulous schools. It doesn't mean just because a school didn't make this list that it's not an exceptional school and not a great value to students. These schools, these 200 schools, so UMass is a good example, just superlative for all the things that we've talked about, plus the financial aid perspective.
UMass, you can attend college courses at any of the other five college schools, including Amherst, which is one of the finest schools in America. And Cornell has a SUNY program that's unique.
It does, absolutely. And you're right, the schools, those five schools in the Pioneer Valley, Amherst also on the list of schools profiled in the, you know, in the book, and Holyoke, and I mean it is a powerful network of undergraduate schools in that Pioneer Valley, and students at any of them get to profit from all of them.
Yes. Yeah, thank
good
you.
Good stuff, of course.
Brendan, thank you for your call this morning. Certainly we do appreciate your patience on the phone as well, and your comments shared with us. Hopefully that information is helpful. Thank you to all the folks who have joined us in this discussion with Rob Franek. Rob, as always, interesting discussions. And I always love where folks who are listening to us take us in these discussions.
Me too.
Because that's what the real fun part of this whole thing is.
Absolutely.
Now, the key question for you.
Yeah.
The next edition of this book, when do you start putting that together?
You know, it's not. I'm so glad you asked the question, but we're going to start in the early part of the summer because it takes us, again, nearly a full year to put the book together. And you know, but we've been doing this book as a yearly edition for the last several years. But just thinking about what is the value of a college education? I know you and I have discussed this in the past. College is of incredible value to students, both from a salary perspective. You know, the students that have an undergraduate degree will earn nearly $2.8 million more than students without an undergraduate degree. They have, you know, lower rates of unemployment. They live longer with better insurance. I mean, there's all sorts of different values to college, and that's why I like, you know, continuing to write this book.
The book is entitled Colleges That Pay You Back, The 200 Schools That Give You the Best Bang for Your Tuition Book. Rob Franek from Princeton Review has joined us on our program. Thank you very much, Rob. Certainly good luck continued with your work.
Pleasure to be here, Bob. Thanks again.
Always an interesting discussion with Rob on our programs. At 8 o'clock this morning after our update, it is Rick Wolf with the Sports Edge program and a very special edition of what I like to call a special show, Football Sunday. I always enjoy that program, and I learn things during it too, each and every week. And there's a special twist with the show today. That's long after our 9 o'clock update. Our thanks to Brian Rascona for the technical direction. You know what's up next.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
At Lowe's, this Veterans Day and every day, verified military members, veterans, and their spouses get automatic silver status in MyLowe's Rewards with free standard shipping, plus 10% off eligible purchases with no annual limit. It's one way we honor and give back to those who have served and still do. Learn more now at Lowe's.com/military. 10% discount can't be combined with another offer. Exclusions, terms, and conditions apply. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at Lowe's.com/terms. Subject to change.
Whatever happens today, take it on with a fresh cup of True Brew coffee. Now only $1 with True Rewards. True North Store's True Brew coffee is a hot, flavorful gourmet blend created from coffee beans from around the world. As a free True Rewards member, pick the size that is perfect for you and pay only $1. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Once upon a mundane morning, Barb's day got busy without warning. A realtor in need of an open house sign? No, 50 of them, and designed before 9.
My head hurts.
Any mighty tools to help with this plight?
Aha!
Barb made her move. She opened Canva and got in the groove.
Bulk creating Canva sheets. Create 50 signs fit for suburban streets.
Done in a click, all complete.
Sweet!
Now, imagine what your dreams can become when you put imagination to work at Canva.com.